Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 3, The Lord's Pastimes, out of Vrindavan, Text 16. Evam sanchincha Bhagavan Svarajistapya dharmajam Nandayam asasurida Sadunam vartmadarsayam. By the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, Maharaj Yudhisthira became the ruler of the world. It's set in the Lord's own kingdom, Swaraja. In the Lord's own kingdom, the Lord placed Yudhisthira Maharaj, because Yudhisthira Maharaj was completely transparent to the will of the Lord. As the living being is surrendering his independence to Krishna, the living being becomes transparent to the will of Krishna. And subsequently, Krishna empowers such a living being. And because Yudhisthira Maharaj was completely transparent to the will of Krishna, he was perfectly empowered. Although all the Pandavas were pure devotees of Krishna, even amongst them, Yudhisthira was, he was the elder son, and he was the natural leader of the Pandavas. Because Yudhisthira was very self-composed, he was a person who was truly in control of the mind and the senses. And he was always acting according to principles of Dharma. The other Pandavas, they were certainly also great and pure devotees. But Bhima sometimes, had a strong nature, and his anger, he sometimes had to really control himself. He did, but sometimes it was a little difficult because he had a different nature. So Yudhisthira particularly was chosen because he was a most balanced person, and therefore he was the perfect leader. During his rule, his kingdom was flourishing and everything became very auspicious everywhere. All opulences were available. The constellations of the stars were very favorable. And thus, it is said that even under certain constellations, rain, when falling upon the river, would turn into pearls. Now we don't have such auspicious constellations, therefore now it doesn't happen. What to do? But at the time of Yudhisthira Maharaj, all these things happened. So the earth produced many natural opulences. And it is described that under the rule of Maharaj Yudhisthira, people were very happy and satisfied. Krishna had a plan. And by the plan of Krishna, Maharaj Pariksit, who took his appearance in the womb of Uttara, was meant to be the successor of Yudhisthira Maharaj, and of equal quality. Also, Maharaj Pariksit was a highly qualified personality. But then Aswatthama interfered with the plan of the Lord and tried to kill Maharaj Pariksit within the womb. And not just kill him, but kill him through a brahmastra. And such brahmastras, that is the weapon of Lord Brahma. It's a celestial weapon. It cannot go in vain. Because Lord Brahma is the supreme ruler in the entire universe. Therefore, the weapon of Lord Brahma, there is no greater weapon other than a weapon of Lord Vishnu. But Lord Vishnu is certainly going to uphold the weapon of Brahma, because Brahma is a dedicated devotee and representative of Krishna. Therefore, the weapon of Brahma never fails. And thus this Brahmastra, it had to reach its target. And it did. It burned the body of Parikshit in the womb. But then, the Supreme Lord, being the Supreme Lord, had a solution and simply provided a new body to Maharaj Parikshit, who then within the womb saw the Supreme Lord before him. And therefore, throughout his whole life, he continued to look for that same personality. And therefore, his name was Parikshit. The Pariksha means test, because he was always testing. He was always testing everyone. Parikshit, the one who was testing. Is this the one I have seen in the womb? No, not this. Is that the one? That one? No. Everywhere. Always looking for Krishna. That was Maharaj Parikshit. So that made him the perfect devotee. Because one who is always looking for Krishna, yes, he is a perfect devotee. Sarva vidhi nisedu shur etiyor eva kinkaram. All the principles of the Vedas, all the rules and all the prohibitions are meant for one purpose, namely smartavyam satatam vishnur vismartavyo najatasit sarva vidhi nisedu shur etiyor eva kinkaram. To always remember Krishna and to never forget him. So Maharaj Parikshit, he had that blessing that Krishna appeared before him and awakened that desire in him. Of course, that desire was already there from previous lives. We cannot imagine the piety of Maharaj Parikshit. But still, upon seeing the Lord, a natural bhav became awakened with him. A natural ecstatic emotion became awakened within him. And therefore, he was very easily Krishna conscious. Because his Krishna consciousness was nourished by ecstasy, it was nourished by bhav. And a devotee who has such kind of Krishna consciousness is avyartakalatvam. He cannot waste a moment. So Maharaj Parikshit could not waste a moment. It wasn't possible for him to waste a moment. It just wasn't possible, because nothing was interesting other than Krishna. He could not be distracted by something mundane, because nothing mundane had meaning to him. Because he was his sense of meaning was awakened. When we associate with Krishna, then Krishna awakens a natural taste within us. After Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, after having seen Krishna, Krishna steals. He steals our vision. Krishna steals all the functions of all our senses. After we have heard Krishna, Krishna steals our hearing capacity. What can we hear after that? Nothing. Some mundane song. No interest. It is described that Narada Muni in a previous life was a Gandharva named Tumburu. Anyway, as this Gandharva, he committed some mistake. He sang a mundane love song. He just sang some love. And immediately, for that love song, he was cursed. Oh, you don't belong here. You go down to earth. Because in these heavenly regions, no one ever chants such a song. There they only chant songs for the glorification of the Lord. Because they're all devotees. That is the culture. Devotees. a devotee culture, glorifying Krishna. That is our business. So Maharaj Pariksit was a devotee throughout. Not a sadhaka, not a devotee who is practicing sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means we're trying to cultivate Krishna consciousness. It's not yet there, but we are trying to do all the activities which bring out Krishna consciousness because we believe in it. So for most of us, that is our Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is, it means there's very little actual attachment to Krishna, but enough to have faith that yes, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and therefore our Krishna consciousness means cultivation. So are you chanting your rounds? Yes, I'm chanting my rounds. Yes. 16. Are you getting up every day? Yes, I'm getting up every day. And so on. Like this. Sadhaka. One who is practicing his devotional service. Such practice is important. Abhyasa yoga yuktena sitasanan yogamina paramam purusham divyam yati partunasintayan. That abhyas, in those who speak Hindi, and some in the audience may speak some Hindi, they know, and even in South, the same, abhyas, because it's Sanskrit. So abhyas means to practice. We practice. We must practice. If we don't practice, then how will we develop the art? One may have a talent. Someone has a talent to sing or to draw. Right? But if you don't practice, then no success. Even if you have a talent, you may be an artist, but you can only become very good by practice. Everything we have to practice. Devotional service, we have to practice. But wait a minute. If devotional service is natural, is the nature of the soul, why do we have to practice? That is my question. If devotional service is not artificial, then why do we have to practice? Because walking is also natural, still you have to practice. Everyone by nature walks at one point in time. But in the beginning, it's difficult. You may remember, or you may not remember, but we see it in front of our eyes. That is difficult when little children try to walk. So, in this way, one has to practice. Shravanadi sudachitta karya udai. By hearing and chanting, we awaken. We awaken our natural attachment and love for Krishna. And this is really our process. Then, on top of that, there are blessings. On top of that, there are blessings of great devotees. When we get blessings of great devotees, in the association of great devotees, we get inspiration. You see, we get some inspiration and our faith increases. Just like I once, in Mayapur, saw this man with a beret and a little beard, just something like Salvador Dali. Right? He looked like him. And I thought, he must be a painter. And sure enough, he was an artist. Right? But then, in Mayapur, as a sannyasi, you try and do some special sadhana. So I was getting up quite early. I mean, early, and then a little earlier. And then, I saw that this painter was already up. And I go like, geez, he's early. He is really early. I mean, gosh. And then, chanting like anything. chanting and chanting and chanting. And then you would see him in all the temple programs. In fact, he would go to all the artiks in the temple. You'd see him the whole day in between chanting. In the afternoon, still chanting. In the evening, still chanting. You think, how many rounds is he chanting? You know what I mean? It's like, so after a while, you know, I start to think, who is this guy? Who is he? You know what I mean? So one day, I went up to him and I said, who are you? Are you a demigod? He said, maybe. So, you know, it's like really puzzled, right? But then, you know, he was an artist, right? So I told him, I said, you know, you should make paintings about the Holy Dham, right? And then make a book of that. So one day, he sent me this book in the mail, you know, and he said, okay, I followed your order. You told me to make this book, so here it is. And it's like drawings and poetry. And then there was a poem in there. And the poem said, I don't memorize it completely, so I can only sort of in my own words repeat it, you know. But the poem sort of, the gist of the poem was like this. I saw that old man and his followers in 1967 in San Francisco. And I knew that he was dangerous. So I kept a safe distance. But I saw him and his disciples. Well, what do you think? It wasn't safe enough, that's for sure. It wasn't safe enough, because although he kept a distance, he still developed faith in Prabhupada. He still developed faith. And it was on the strength of that faith that he could rise earlier than early and early and still earlier than that. Right? And chant rounds and rounds and rounds and go to all the artis in the temple in one day. I mean, that's not a small thing to do in the Holy Dham. Anybody who goes to the Holy Dham and does that, comes back totally vibrant, totally surcharged with spiritual energy. Anybody who does that in the Holy Dham, people sometimes ask me, what do you do when you go to the Holy Dham? Well, do that. Do that if you can. And nothing else. That's enough. That's quite enough. And even if you do half, it's pretty good. Yeah. So the point was that, yes, by this moment, loba matra sadhu sangha, loba matra sadhu sangha sarva shastra kai, loba matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi hai. By a moment of association with a pure devotee, all perfection can be attained because we develop faith. And it's that faith that carries us. We develop faith and possibly ecstasy, possibly taste, possibly an experience. Just like that story of the wrestler in South India in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. There is this story of a wrestler. And this wrestler, a powerful, muscular man, you know, type with bronzed shoulders and tattoos on them, you know, them. One of those, right, walking around with big muscles, and fell in love with this very beautiful, slender girl. And he would serve her, and he would hold a parasol over her head wherever she walked. The little princess and the wrestler. And then one day Ramanuja Acharya saw this wrestler and he asked him, he just stopped him, and he said, why are you serving this girl in this way? The wrestler said, she is so beautiful.
you call that beautiful? Well, if it would have been anybody else, you know, they wouldn't have gotten away with it, you know. But but what to do? Some acharya. So he said, like, well, I mean, you're saying she's not beautiful? Then you show me what is beautiful. All right, Ramanujacharya said, I will show you. You come here tomorrow. And they met in this place the next day, and Ramanujacharya took the wrestler by the hand and went via back lanes and curves and this and that. And suddenly they stood in front of the deity of the Lord. And when Lord Ranganath, and when this wrestler saw the Lord, because of the presence of Ramanujacharya, he was invested with transcendental power, and therefore he was able to see the deity for a moment through transcendental eyes. And then it struck him that indeed there is no beauty greater than the beauty of the Lord. And then he said, yes, this is beauty. Yes, there is no beauty that can compare to this beauty. And he became a disciple of Ramanujacharya, and a very dedicated one, and so on. And, the story goes a little further, and we'll get to that. But first let me get to the point. That by the mercy of a great Vaishnava, one can have a different experience. One can actually experience Krishna in another way. This is known as chaya bhav, or borrowing the ecstasy of a Vaishnava. Wherever Srila Prabhupada was in the world, that was the most important place. Didn't matter where he went, that was it. That was where it was happening. And devotees from all around the world would be looking, would be following that. Where is Prabhupada now? What is he doing now? Even they didn't have Facebook and internet where you just follow someone, right? You know, and now it's pretty easy to follow someone, right? Please allow people, you know, to know your whereabouts, right? Yeah. So automatically it's being followed. But no, it wasn't so easy, but still devotees followed. Still everybody knew where Prabhupada was. When Prabhupada used to write these letters on blue aerograms, right? You know, and everybody, you know, these kind of things you fold up, and then didn't need an envelope. So when any such aerogram would come in the mail, everybody knew somebody got a letter of Prabhupada. And whoever got that letter of Prabhupada, all the other devotees were sort of standing next to him, okay. You know? And they just gave the person who got the letter enough time to read it. You know, are you finished? Are you finished? You know, there's no question of, this is my letter. No. This is a letter from Prabhupada. This is everybody's letter, you know. I mean, so they would just practically take it out of his hands, and then, you know, it became public property. The letter of Prabhupada. Somehow or other, wherever there was Prabhupada, that was the center of the universe. That was the most important place there was on earth. And it was, because that was the place where the most mercy in the entire universe was available. That was the place from where you could, when you open your mouth like that, in a big yawn, there's a demon coming out of your mouth. And that demon attacks other people. And that's why when one person yawns, others also yawn. So you have to snap in front of your mouth. Look, like this. Yeah, like that. Prabhupada taught so many things. time I was standing in the doorway and had a conversation with Trivikram Swami, who had a lot of personal association with Prabhupada. And I was saying something, and I forgot what I was saying, but I was saying something to Maharaj, and Maharaj said, "That's totally useless." So I was a little shocked, you know. I mean, I'm speaking to him, right? And make a point, you know, and Maharaj goes, "That's totally useless." So I was kind of like, well, okay. As if he'd just thrown cold water in my face, you know. And standing there, he said, "Yes, that's totally useless. Because Prabhupada said, when you stand in the doorway, whatever you say will bear no fruit." So, from then on, okay, another thing I learned. You don't just stand in the doorway and talk to someone. There's so many things, so much, such a science, actually. This transcendental knowledge. All forgotten now, in this age of Kali. Because the brahmanas are cursed in the age of Kali. In the Shilpa, the knowledge is lost, actually. It's all lost. So all the arts are being lost. The culture is being lost. Knowledge is being lost. The sanskaras are lost. The scriptures are lost. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that only 6% of Vedic literature was still available in his time. This is like 1850. Right? So, you know, I mean, now more is lost. But even though, Prabhupada said, yes, the Vedic culture is lost, but just like an elephant, even when the elephant is dead, it's still very valuable. Bones are ivory and, you know, so many things, still very valuable. So Vedic culture, whatever the remnants are, is still valuable. But it is not possible to restore Vedic culture. That cannot be done. Unless the Lord again reveals all that knowledge. Because the knowledge is not available. Even if the desire would be there in people's minds and hearts to go back to Varna Ashram and properly follow all the principles, it's not possible. Sanskaras are no longer available. See, we cannot perform all the sanskaras because we do not have the information of how to actually do it. So we cannot correctly follow the sanskara. Therefore, harinama, 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 eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, 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 gatir anyata. Therefore, the root of sankirtan is ultimately the only option, the only way in this age to truly become elevated. Kalo tadhari kirtanat. That is the process, yes. And this Harinam Sankirtan in the Adi Purana is described as, it is said, one who is chanting the holy name of the Lord comes very close in the association of the Lord. Upanishad, sit close by. See, the essence, it is said, the essence of the Vedas are the Upanishads. They are the Upanishads. And Upanishad means to sit close by. Sometimes the Upanishads are part of the Vedas, of the four, of the Atharva Veda, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda. And it says that Prabhupada sometimes mentions, he said, the Upanishads are like the headlines of the Vedas. Like in the newspaper, you have the headlines. The headlines. And Upanishad means sit close by. So that was meant for the Nivritti Mark, for the path of ending material existence, not Pravritti Mark. Yeah, so much Pravritti Mark. Danam dehi, rupavati dehi, rupabharyam dehi. Yes, yes, give some blessings for health, wealth, beauty, fame, all these things for the body, for the physical existence in this world. Yes. No. Nivritti Mark, not Pravritti Mark, the path of material improvement.
to go to higher planetary systems where life is celestial, where one day of their time is 6 months of our time. And people live there, ten thousands of their years. So you calculate, very long, long life. And you don't get old. Mm-mm. You don't get old. No perspiration. The body always smells sweet and fragrant. Yes. Fresh, young, yes. Beautiful throughout. No ugly people. Yeah. It kind of helps. Yes, in this world, you know. Just look around you or look in the mirror. I mean, what to do? And even if you're the exception and you are beautiful, how long is it going to last? It's like, you know, at 17, sweet 17, there's a number that are beautiful. At sweet 27, there's a few less that are beautiful. At sweet 37, there's a whole bunch that are over the hill. At 47, you go like, you see a picture of what they look like at 70, you go, is that you? And well, you know, anybody's who's still beauty at 57, you start to think, facelift? Yeah? I mean, you know, let's be realistic. There was this movie that I once saw, and there's these two beautiful people coming home, Hollywood types. You know, he is broad-shouldered, athletic, wearing a smoking from the party, and she, evening gone, and beautiful, gorgeous, blonde, all the right measurements, right places, and so on. And then, as they come home, they kick their shoes off, and he had false plateaus in his shoes. So he's not as tall as he looked. Then she pulls off the wig, and some miserable strands of hair are coming out. And, you know, he takes off his jacket with the false shoulder fillings. And as he lets the belly strap go, she lets the air out of the balloons. And in the end, there's these two old people sitting in bed, and their teeth are smiling at you from a glass of water. It's a very good movie. it's really something else. Yeah, that was a good movie. Unfortunately, I don't remember what it was called. Yeah. But I never forgot it. One of those things. So anyway, we are in this way seeing that all the blessings for the body are ultimately not going to be enough. Even Maharaj Pariksit, who got a new body from the Lord, okay, you know, I mean, he didn't walk around, I got this body from Vishnu directly. Really? No, but even he had to give up that body, and sooner than expected. Even when he was still fit and young and kind of in best health, suddenly cursed, and unduly cursed, inappropriately cursed by some fallen Brahmin boy who had become proud. It is said Sringi. With Sringi begins the downfall of the Brahminical class, because Sringi was proud. He lost the natural quality of humility, which is the property of the Brahmin. And thus, he cursed the king who was innocent, and then to die within 7 days by snake bite. And so it came to pass that
taksak had so much poison that the body of Maharaj Pariksit burned. It burned up in flames due to the poison. So that was quite powerful snake bite. And so on. But Maharaj Pariksit was totally transcendental. Totally transcendental. And that, then, it doesn't matter here or there. It doesn't matter here or there because all along one was here and there. Just like, imagine it would be Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja and I would start my offering and, you know, and the most amazing thing is that Srila Prabhupada went back to Godhead. Everyone would look at me like, you know, I mean, are you all right? You know? I mean, where are you coming from? What do you mean the most amazing thing is that Prabhupada went back to Godhead? He was always back to Godhead. He never left Godhead. He was always there. What are you talking? You know, the most amazing thing is that he went back to Godhead. He was there every moment. Even although he was in this world, in a body made of flesh and blood, like everyone else, at the same time, he was there in the spiritual world. And there's no doubt about it. Look, look at his effulgence. Look at that smile. No ordinary man can smile like that. No, no one can smile like that. Even those who always smile, they don't have that effulgence. They don't have that effulgence. Such an effulgence. And if you doubted that the effulgence was there, in Germany, someone was taking pictures, and in those days, and with a flash, and Prabhupada said, no more light balls. So that was the end of the flash. So then he used, you know, in those days it was film, he used a slow film. And then you have to put the camera on a tripod because it's very sensitive on a slow film. And so he had it on a tripod and a little cord so that he wouldn't touch the camera, clicking away. And he was, in those days, you had to adjust the lens manually and you had a light meter. So he had this light meter in his hand, you know. Suddenly the light meter went right up. You know, he says, did someone turn on the light? No. It was Prabhupada beaming. And it was a German light meter. So that's hard evidence, you know. There's no doubt about it. That Prabhupada, see, effulgence was so extraordinary and it could be measured on a German light meter. Just see. Transcendental personalities are different. They are simultaneously here and simultaneously there in the spiritual. Therefore, what do they care when this material body ceases to exist? It doesn't mean anything to them. It's not that I'm trying to be Krishna conscious and now, you know, oh my God, now my last day has come. Bring the tulsi, quick, kavachas, bring, you know, the holy earth, bring everything you have because I need all the help I can get. No, very casual. Such personalities can leave this world very casual. Because they're already there. It's not like, will I go back to Godhead? Will I not go back to Godhead? Will I go back to Godhead? Will I not go back to Godhead? Will I not go back to Godhead? You know, it's like they're already there. Yes. So such personalities we are discussing today, in the form of Yudhisthira Maharaj, in the form of Maharaj Pariksit, and in the form of Srila Prabhupada. And in that way, just by discussing such personalities, so many blessings come. And just that alone is something that can give us, surcharge us with spiritual strength. And therefore, we're very happy to discuss about Yudhisthira Maharaj. Even after so many thousands of years, it's like my last story. Satsarupa Maharaj describes that he had this, that when he was new, he was still Steve. And then an old friend of his came. And this friend, he was not into Krishna consciousness at all. Right? And somehow or other, in his association, it didn't work at all. So Satsarup, you know, was just saying, you know, the Swami, whatever he says is parampara, you know, it is parampara. It comes in disciplic succession. It's completely bona fide, you know what I mean? You know, whatever he says is like, it's unchanged from scriptures that are 5,000 years old. And his friend said, I think it doesn't make any sense to bother with things that are 5,000 years old. I think we should deal with contemporary issues. A total mundaner. And in the end, Satsarup, a song, a melody of an old song came to his mind, and he hummed it for a moment, unknowingly. And the words of that song were, stick to your own kind. And then his friend, yes, said, yes, why don't you stick to your own kind? And those are the last words, and then he left. So that is a fact that a materialist cannot appreciate, a personality like Yudhisthira Maharaj, and doesn't value him like a timeless person, doesn't appreciate that just to discuss about Yudhisthira Maharaj is the greatest blessing. They rather discuss something about a punk rocker or, you know, somebody, you know, who's in right now. I don't even know who's in right now, you know what I mean? Who's a big star right now? Anybody knows? Just testing. When Krishna does what?
Give birth, beauty, fame, wealth, health, everything. Why he take back everything?
So why not? It's his. It's his. He gives it. Krishna gives us things. Why, if Krishna gives us beauty, health, wealth, and so on, why does he take back everything? Because it's his. See, we think, oh, thank you very much, Krishna. Now it's mine. It's not. Krishna gives it to us to look after for a while. So Krishna said, oh, you know, just like when I go in that little private room, you know, then I give my beads. Can you hold them for a moment? And you go, thank you very much. I always wanted to have beads like that. Yeah. You see what happens after when I come back, you know. Yeah. You'd better take your glasses off, you know. you know. So, in the same way, it's Krishna's beauty. It's Krishna's wealth. It all belongs to Krishna, and he lets you look after for a little while. And you, so we can't claim, no, but, no, no. We are caretakers on Krishna's behalf. So when Krishna feels, now I want to take my property back, you are complaining, then you can.
But sometimes you take early something.
You take early or late, that's up to him, no? I mean, you know, I can let you hold my beads a little longer or a little shorter. It's up to me. They're my beads, you know. It's Krishna's property. The problem comes when we start to think we are the proprietor. I am so beautiful. Then you start to think, you know, oh yes, this is my glory. Oh yes, I'm exceptional. I am the most wonderful personality. 'cause I am so beautiful. And your whole life, you know, you're just walking around, I'm so beautiful. And then, just when you are totally puffed up and proud, right, just when you're at the height of your pride, then Krishna takes it away. Just like Beethoven, you know. Da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na. He became deaf. Can you imagine? That's something. The greatest of composers. You know, I mean, that's something. Da-na-na-na. You come up with that, you know? I mean, he went deaf. So Krishna was really testing him there, teaching him something. So yes, there's one story, since I'm telling stories, I tell a story. I give it a short version of the story. You know. But basically, there was a king, and this king had a court pundit, you know, traditional this, that. One day asked the pundit this question, what is the daily work of God? So what's the daily work of God? Quick, 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 fata fat. Jaldi karo.
Accepting the wishes from...
Accepting
the
offerings of the devotees. Achcha, daily work of God, accepting the offering of the devotees. He has to work for us. That's not the daily work of God. Anyway, the pandit said the creation. No, that's not the daily work of God. So the king asked, what is it? Pandit said, well, I need little time, your majesty, to consult the scripture. He couldn't find the answer, so he thought, maybe I should leave town. And as he was leaving, he met a disciple, and that disciple was a simple man, cowherd man. And he asked this man, who smelled like cows, etc., he said, that man asked him, where are you going? He said, oh, the king, you know, asked this impossible question, what's the daily work of God? Oh, that's easy, the cowherd said. That's easy. Oh, if it's so easy, what's the answer? No. I will tell the king directly. All right. They went to the king. Your majesty, my disciple will answer your question, because it's a very simple question, actually. So the king is smelling this man, smells like cows. Who's this? You know what I mean? And the cowherd man sits on the ground. Then he says, your majesty, before I answer the question, may I ask a question? Yes. Is it true that according to the Vedas, one who gives the answer should sit higher than the one who asked the question? The king looks at him down from his throne and says, what? You want to sit on the throne? He says, well, what do the Vedas say? King comes down, that's roaring, offers it to the smelly cowherd man, and so looks at the royal guard like if he better give a good answer, and says, and then the cowherd man says, your majesty, your question is already answered. Now the king, blood pressure went dangerously high at that point. So then, to save his life, the cowherd man said, but I will tell you the answer. And the daily work of God is to bring down those who are proud and to elevate those who are humble. That's the daily. That's why he gives and takes away. I am so beautiful. See the poem? ashram, yes, but not fully, not without sankirtan. If it is not possible to revive the Vedic culture unless the Lord reveals, I said. So that's another thing. If Krishna gives us all the knowledge somehow or other, then that Vedic culture can be revived. The principle of our movement is sankirtan. And it is a 10,000 year golden age where sankirtan is in the center. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, remember. So that will remain. Prabhupada says the Vedic culture is like a very refined culture where we are shaping people, just like you shape an ornament with a tiny little hammer. Whereas the sankirtan movement is like a sledgehammer. In one blow, boff, you know, done. So there is some special power in sankirtan, which will remain at the core of this movement. So it's not entirely just reviving Vedic culture. It's more than that. We are the sankirtan movement. But the sankirtan movement is rooted in Vedic culture. But it is not like that every Vedic ritual will be required. Sankirtan will do like that. But to what extent Krishna will revive Vedic culture, I don't know. That we will see if we stick around to see the fun of what the golden age will look like. Some ideas I have, it says, although Srila Prabhupada said that we should reinstitute Varna Ashram, based actually on instructions of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who pointed out that Varna Ashram is relevant to us as long as we are conditioned souls. So then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta showed that he was not transcendental to Varna Ashram and therefore took sannyas instead of Babaji. Sannyas is still within the four ashrams and Babaji is Paramahansa Vesh, beyond. So that is there. In the Brahma Vaivata Purana, the golden age is described. And there's a discussion between Krishna and Ganga. And in that discussion, Krishna says that in the golden age, there will be one class, Ekavarna, not Chaturvarna. Not Chaturvarna. He said, Ekavarna Haribhakta. So not Chaturvarna, Mayam Sristam, not the four Varnas, but one Varna, devotees of the Lord. So that's why this golden age will not be completely Vedic culture. It will be transcendental culture. Yeah. Yeah. It will be extraordinary. Just someone was reminding me of that, you know, and that like, it will all be spontaneous devotional service. The golden age will not be a temple on every street corner, but the golden age will be devotees who come ecstatic out of their house and just start singing the name of the Lord, and someone will bring a badanga, and someone else will bring kartals, and some ladies will look and think, oh, they must be hungry, and start making some pizzas, and, you know, prasad. All spontaneous. And the whole city of Melbourne will join in. And it will be so loud, the kirtan, that they can hear it in Adelaide, and they'll start as well. In Vrindavan, in the early morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can hear this, you could hear this sound, you know, now not so much anymore, but it used to be like, so many, right? And it's like, and then, the peacocks on one side of Vrindavan wake up the ones on the other side. So then you hear an echo far away. And again. And it goes like waves all lineage would be something like that. Kirtan will just go like waves. It's like, yeah, you know. Instead of surfers with a surfboard, you know, trying to catch a wave, you know, people will try and catch a kirtan wave, you know, spiffy madangas, and like that. In Australia, they have special designer madangas. Aussie rules. Okay, Gyana has the last word then, because it's getting really late.
Did you understand why this storehouse of another god, is he just a door there, is he getting a little bit of drop out? When's he going to happen? When's he going to let?
It's like...
The
storehouse of love of God, is Lord Nityananda standing by the door? It's not open yet. It's wide open. It's gushing out in all directions. The only thing is, you know, it's penetrating slowly. I learned that when I was in Mayapur involved in the construction and of the samadhi. And what happens is, when you make concrete, a big concrete dome like that, there are many fine cracks, and water comes down, it rains down, and that rain penetrates into the building. But you don't see it. You don't notice it. It just finds its way through the building. And just, you know, and then suddenly one day, you know, one day you've got a leak in the building, and then all this water is coming out. But it was in there for a long time before it came out. So recently in Ireland... and you can see it on my blog if you want to, kksblog.com. Not advertising here, but yeah. But it was kksblog.com. Right? You can read on my blog that article. And it's a very interesting article in the Independent, an Irish newspaper. And there it's described, basically it is, are we all Hare Krishnas? Right? And the idea is that like everybody is into yoga, everybody knows about karma. Everybody's into reincarnation. Hare Krishna has totally infiltrated. And some people, to a degree, they are like, you know, they're absorbing some of the philosophy and others more. And it's just like, everybody's into it. And it's like, and the article ends, are we all going to wind up in pink robes? You know? So... it finds the cracks and it is penetrating like anything. Read the article. Okay, with that, we'll end.